Welcome to Lemme Works, brought to you by Leadership Education Mentoring Institute. This week's episode is a recording of a conversation produced by Tiffany Earle and Anelany Milne, the founders of Lemme.
We've done our best to enhance the audio of the 20-year-old conference call. While the sound may not be the best, the content is a classic.
The first question I'm going to introduce is, why study human nature? Or why know about human nature? Why is human nature important to understand? I'd like to bring up the point that the founders, as they were writing the Constitution, quoted from several authors of the day and before. And it is interesting to look at the authors and what they wrote about. I'm going to list the first 10 authors that they quoted most from. The first would be Montesquieu, Blackstone, Locke, Hume, Plutarch, Beccaria, Trenchard and Gordon, Delaume, Pufendorf, Koch, Cicero. Oops, I did 11, sorry. But if you look at all of their writings, every single person in those first 10, 11 authors mentions or even bases their thesis on a point of human nature and has introduced their thesis for the purpose of defining human nature or helping humans get along better and overcoming some of our more natural tendencies that would be destructive. So in order for us to learn how to govern well together, we have to have some kind of understanding of human nature. And in order for us to get along with each other, it's good for us to have the knowledge of who we are. So let us ask the question first. What is the state of man? That is one of the questions that has been the greatest point of argument over the centuries. If we understand the state of man, or the nature of man, we then therefore can decide how to govern. So the answer to this question all hinges upon the answer to this question.
Mom, now, is that clear?
Yes.
To make a point, I think this question here, what is the nature of man, has been the question that's been debated for the existence of man. Plato and Aristotle debated this. All of the great philosophers debated this. And still to this day, we're debating this.
Yes, we are. Okay. But would you not agree, Tatiana, that there was some kind of consensus, some amazing, weird consensus that happened at the Constitutional Convention when they were writing the Constitution about the nature of man?
Yeah, definitely. I think it came in the realization that even though the people are weak, we have to trust the people and give them their government and give them the right to govern themselves. And I think in realizing that and giving a government for the people, the founders said, in essence, that man is good and we can trust man.
But they understood also that man was bad.
Yeah.
Because they had to put all kinds of checks and balances on an individual man.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I don't even know if the Founding Fathers knew that they were coming to a consensus of what man was through their debates. And I think it's very interesting because I have a very, very good friend who is a doctor, and she's a rehab physician, and she works on children who have brain injuries, and she is so adamant about the importance of car seats. She's lobbied for them. She's, you know, put a lot of effort into making sure that the people of America have to use a car seat and have to use it well. They have to use it correctly. And we have this discussion, and I said, I'm all about education, that we should educate our people to how important it is for us to use car seats well. I said, but I'm not for legislation. That's kind of where I stand, because I don't believe that government was created for the purpose of forcing the people to do what is right for them. And she argued with me, and then I said to her, freedom works. And I think I really just took her back. Okay. She says, I don't agree with that. And I said, well, then you would have disagreed with our founding fathers.
That's so funny, because Dr. Mill will always pull that on us when they're in a simulation or anything, you know, be frustrated and mad and trying to figure out how to preserve freedom. And the answer is within freedom itself. And he's always saying freedom works. And I think that's the hardest thing for us to buy. Maybe perhaps because we don't understand ourselves and then understand that we have both a good side and a side that we need to protect.
I'd like to tell a story. On one of the hottest days of the year, Jean-Jacques Rousseau set out from Paris to visit his longtime friend Diderot. While on his visit, to entertain himself, he would go for long walks. He had brought with him a copy of a journal, the Mercure de France, and he would read while he walked. He explains, while reading, I came across the subject proposed by an academy of Dijon. Has the progress of art and science done more to corrupt or more to purify our morals? That's a big question. Has the progress, and you have to understand that Rousseau was an artist, so he was quite interested in this statement. Has the progress of the arts and the sciences done more to corrupt or more to purify? What I think is interesting is we could ask that exact same question today, don't you think, Tatiana?
Yeah. I don't know if the answer would be, but we hoped it would.
This is what he says. The moment I read these words, I beheld another universe and became another man. Overwhelmed, Rousseau collapsed under a tree, weeping in agitation. He says, if ever I could have written a quarter of what I had felt under that tree, with what clarity would I have revealed all the contradictions of the social system? I could demonstrate that man is naturally good, and that it is through our institutions alone that men become bad. That's what he conjectures, okay? Now, contrastly, St. Augustine of Hippo conjectures that, and I'm going to paraphrase this because it's a big, long quote that I've kind of condensed down. I hope I haven't misquoted in any way. He says, God alone is essentially and perfectly good. Everything else possesses but a limited goodness. And insofar as man is in the spirit, he is good. Otherwise, man is essentially bad.
Say that again so I can understand that.
Okay. He says, God alone is essentially and perfectly good. Everything else possesses but a limited goodness. And insofar as the man is in the spirit, he is good. Now, he uses some different words that I've been trying to put in my own words so that it can be better understood, because it was a very lengthy, complex quote.
So he says that God is goodness, and we have a little bit of goodness in us, and we're good when we live with the spirit, but we're otherwise just bad.
Yes. He says otherwise we're bad. Now, comparing the two, Rousseau and Augustine, I would have to say the two of them differ greatly. Would you not agree?
Yeah, and it's interesting to see their philosophies develop off of that viewpoint.
Yeah, and what they did with their belief in what man was, right? Because Rousseau, because of the philosophy that he had, you know, he started to talk about reforming the institutions and making the institutions better and making more free, and he sort of went a little bit overboard about how the institution could, if it's done correctly, would give us all the freedom we needed and could even take care of our children for us. And Augustine, you know, being one of the great leaders of the Catholic Church, I think instituted a lot of policy within the Catholic Church to save man from their badness.
I think it's interesting also, though, because Rousseau, he gave the people way too much freedom and created virtually anarchy
right.
with the French Revolution. But Augustine, he restricted the men so much that he created the Middle Ages with no progression, because man was not free to thrive and to be.
And the Catholic Church has done a lot of reforming and added a lot more freedom into their system now, and it's very effective now. But they were under a lot of the darkness of that, almost the tyranny that was created from the energy that was put behind that thought, don't you think?
Yeah, I think probably, like, Augustine didn't mean it to that extent, well, maybe
no.
He did, but I think but because of his writings, the Catholic Church, you know, took it extreme.
I would agree with you, Tatiana. I don't think that Augustine meant that, and I don't think I don't know about Rousseau, but I do know that if we come from a tainted point of view and we put something into motion, it's going to be going to that direction. It will start going toward that direction. And if we do not put in our checks and balances, and if we do not have the correct philosophy, the direction it's going to take is going to take us to eventual bondage.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what these philosophies, they sent them into a direction these philosophies went to an extreme. Okay. So, as we've said before, we have been arguing these things for hundreds of years. And I'd like to propose, could they both be partially right? Wordsworth says, man is of the dust, but ethereal hopes are his. And I love poetry because I think in poetry we can express all of the weird phenomenon of life. One of the weird phenomenon of life, I think, is that how can we be both? How can there be two sides of us? You know, the Dr. and Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing. How is that possible that I am good and yet I have a bad nature that I have to root out of me? You know, this weird thing that's so hard for us to grasp and get our brain around. Okay, so if man is of a dual nature, let me propose now that the natural man is an enemy to good and the common good of man, but that there is within man a spark of the divine, which causes his heart to turn and swell towards goodness. Turnbull, who was a great educator during the Scottish Enlightenment, he believed that the most important goal of education was to teach a child, to teach the student, to submit his will to the divine mind. That if education was not for these ends, that the education did not have purpose. Now, that's interesting, don't you think, Tatiana, that in our world today, because we think education is all about getting a job.
Yeah, we submit them to the physical world. We don't submit them to the divine.
So one of the questions that people ask you all the time, tell them the story that you talked to me about when you guys were in your training for the gala.
Oh, yeah, we were in training for gala. Well, there's this college is putting an ambassador program to help train their students to be more diplomatic. And so they asked a question that they were just in mock oral, and the question was asked, why are you going to Georgia's College? You can't get a job. One of the students said, something defective, I'm going to be making the jobs that you make. So just proving that when man is able to conquer their mind, they can create things and not just be something to be created with, or that they are a creator.
That's a very interesting comment, Tatiana. So are you implying that if we get the kind of education that will help us to submit our will to the divine mind, that we then become creators?
Yeah.
That's a very interesting concept.
Well, if you think about it, well, Dr. Mill talked to us about the other day, the Indian tribes, and they believe in six kind of beings. And one of the beings that they believe in are obeyers, or things like of the earth. And they're subject to the elements. The man is a creator. And so if we have an education of the world, opposed to an education of the divine, then we will have an education where we, of the world, makes us be subject to the elements.
I think it's better to say if we have an education, a material education.
Yeah, that's better to say. But it makes us subject to the elements. But if education of the divine enables us, I should say, to create.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay. So let us make some points about the difference between the natural man, or I'm going to give it another word, the carnal man, as opposed to the divine mind or the divine nature. Okay? The natural man has fear, has anger, creates strife, is prideful, takes offense easily, is power hungry, and is envious. Now, the divine mind or the divine nature of man within us is the ability to forgive, to be meek, to be humble, to love, and to be kind.
You know, it's interesting. We just went through simulation block at George Witt, which is a grueling process. And I saw so much of the natural man, and it really made me sick. But the moments when I saw the divine man, for the moment, we're simply amazing.
That makes it worth all the trouble, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I saw so much pride, so much fear, so much anger, so much frustration and miscommunication.
Okay, so now I'm going to introduce the next question. Now that we have come to some kind of consensus that the founding fathers, even though they may not have come right out and said it, that man is of a dual nature, They created the government, and all of their great debates led to the belief that man is of a dual nature. And our government was set up upon this. So, because of the dual nature, we have a problem. We have a problem amongst men. Because we have within us this carnal, natural man, but we have a desire for the divine. C.S. Lewis, in his great writings, The Mere Christianity, he talks about the two ways that men go wrong. The first thing he says is, we drift apart. The second thing is, we collide. Now, I just think all this, here we have these two problems. Again, we're introduced to a huge dichotomy, two different ends of the spectrum. One, we drift apart. We don't see each other. We separate ourselves completely from each other. And two, we collide. We smack into one another. We get in each other's way. So we can't be in those extremes, because that's when man goes wrong, on those two extremes. We have to come somewhere in the middle where we're working together and we're learning how not to collide, that we each can get into our own lanes and navigate our ships so that they're not colliding, but that we're serving one another, so that we're together. He says the voyage of life will be a success only, in the first place, if each ship is seaworthy and her engines in good order, and secondly, if we do not collide and get in each other's way. Now, I do think it's interesting. I don't necessarily agree with Rousseau and everything, but he makes a very interesting statement. He says, man has a spiritual ability. It is to resist the commands of nature. By exercising its freedom in concert with others, and he calls this the social contract. You're going to come upon this word, social contract. Rousseau talks about the social contract, and Locke talks about the social compact. Okay?
Wait.
Yes.
Can I just say that again so I'm understanding it?
Okay.
So man has an ability within himself to overcome the natural man by interaction with others?
Yeah, by exercising his freedom.
By exercising his freedom. But
yes.
Can he do it by himself, or does it have to be with others? What is Rousseau saying?
Rousseau says that it has to be with others, that the only way we can really test how we overcome those natural commands is through, and he says, in concert with one another, through the social contract. The social contract, he says, that will inevitably perfect us. Do you think that's interesting?
I really do. Like thinking about it, it makes complete sense, though, because it makes sense because when you're an entity all by yourself, you can't see your flaws, you can't see what's wrong with you because it's just you. But
right.
When you get together with others, you start to begin to realize, oh, I should work on that. Oh, that's not a good thing.
Yeah. And I go back to Maslow and his philosophy or his theories that he talks about how important it is that us as youth, you know, when we become that age around 12 years old and we start separating ourselves from our parents and we start identifying ourselves as separate, that we have to have some kind of a mirror in our peers to help us to see who we are.
I think that's one of the most powerful things with simulation block is that it's this one big, long, intense self-evaluation. But you can only get it when you have to work with others, when you're stuck in a room with people and trying to figure out an idea. That's when you really come to find yourself.
Yeah.
So I think Rousseau really hit it on there.
Yeah, he did. I think he did. And it's very interesting that you should point out that simulations do that. I know some people really hate simulations for that very reason. I mean, I've written in simulations, and I haven't ever intended to make it painful for it. I mean, sometimes I intend. But sometimes I don't intend to make it painful for people, and it is painful. That's the beautiful thing with simulation. Okay, Carl Jung says, everyone makes for himself his own segment of his world and constructs his own systems. Now, Covey would call these paradigms, the glasses that we see life through. And because we each have our own, and I like this, our own segment of the world and our own constructs. I like that explanation. It kind of draws some pictures for me. We have this little segment, you know.
Just to interject with an example, at Simulation Block, we were debating this really interesting topic of whether a tricameral house or a bicameral house would work, or how to check and balance it. And the mentors there just started going at it and just started like debating with each other, and they're all yelling at each other and getting intense with each other. And like it kind of threw me off. I was like, the mentors are debating this, like they don't all agree. And then later on, Dr. Schultheis in her debrief said, we all understood the principles, but I had a different perception of the principle. And we were with like a millimeter separate of understanding each other, but it's that millimeter of like that perception which made us debate and argue for so long. That teeny little millimeter
that
of
little
our
teeny
perception.
Segment of our own little world.
Yeah, that makes it so that we can like, argue for so long.
Very interesting. Okay, now, and Carl Jung says humans have capacity to individually feel, reason, make judgment, act upon our thoughts and feelings, sense the world, and to order it. That's a lot of differences. You know, if I have a different way to feel and to reason and make judgment and act upon my feelings and thoughts and sense my world and to order it, then you, and you're my daughter, could be imagined. There's so many ways that the variables that there are. And he goes on to say there are so many variables that...
That's why I like Mises' Law 24. Mathematics is useless in predicting human nature because it's based on probability. And men are never alike.
Very good. Okay. And then Carl Jung goes on to say something very profound, and he talks about the finite nature of man and the infinite nature of man. I think that's really interesting if you slotted the natural man being more the finite and the divine man being more the infinite. And he says, the finite will never fully understand the infinite. So this is our problem. Being finite beings and infinite beings, we can never fully understand without understanding or having some kind of grasp of the infinite. And he asks the question, how do we create codes or rules of conduct that would have us behave equally towards all man, with all the many variables there are? And I think it's very interesting, the system of explanation that he's come up with to help us have understanding of the human nature. And he's the one who is the founder of the Briggs-Meyer personality typing. And he created that system because he had these questions. I think it's interesting to look at the philosophy behind why things are created. And personally, I think that Briggs-Meyer has given us some wonderful understanding of man. I don't think it gives us all understanding. As he said, the finite will never fully understand the infinite, but it's a tool. And this is when I would propose that much of the solution of our problems could be in just an understanding the differences in those little segments of how we think and reason, how we order our world. Okay. So let's go back to the ship idea. How do we avoid collision or drifting apart? And I'm going to offer, which is our last segment, the solution for man. So we've asked, why do we study human nature? And then we've asked, what is the state of man? And then we've proposed the problem of man. And now I'd like to introduce or propose the solution for man. This is what I believe is the reason and the purpose for religion and governments that are instituted among men. The governments issue codes of conduct through law, and religion issues codes of conduct through scripture and commands by God. That the purpose for those two entities at all is to help us with the solution of the problem of man. Perhaps we can find the answer to the solution then by studying the great thoughts and teachers of religion and governments. Socrates taught that to understand our true nature, the nature of us that is so evident to all, is to look elsewhere. Look elsewhere to that love of wisdom that one can lift the human being outside of itself and to perhaps love each other.
He's saying that loving wisdom can lift us above ourselves and help love each other?
Yes. And that the solution to our problem is to love one another. The only way that we can get to loving one another is to love wisdom. That's interesting. And people probably would say, what was Socrates well known for? And you would have to say probably the founder of philosophy, which his definition of the founding of philosophy, or that philosophy is the love of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that's what philosophy is now today. But since he is the founder of the science of philosophy, I'm going to go with his original definition.
We're interrupting this episode to invite you to ask questions or share your epiphanies in the comment section.
And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving us a good review on the platform you are using, because that really helps others find our content.
Also, check out our website at lemmyhomeschool.com.
Okay. Years later, a man named Jesus came along and taught this also. He said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you." And I keep wondering in my mind, why does it say a new commandment that I give unto you? Because in my mind, God has always asked us to love one another. But maybe for the Christian, that had to be the new focus, the new emphasis, that the most important trump card is that they love one another. that there's so many other things that they could be looking at. But if they would focus on that one, you know, in the Christian view, I just did some studying on the word charity and discovered that the word charity is, the word itself, charity, is very unique to the Christian religion. That the Muslim or the Hindu or the Eastern religions don't teach that as a focus or foundation. And so maybe that is why Jesus taught this, or that it's uniquely Christian. I once asked Dr. DeMille, what was the most important characteristic of a good teacher? Tatiana, what do you think he told me?
Love.
Yep. Yep, that's what he told me. He said, it doesn't matter how much they know, it doesn't matter how much they do. The most important aspect, the most important characteristic of a good teacher is that they love their students.
Yeah, and he's good at that.
Yes, he is. Oh, my gosh. And you know what's so interesting is I've had experiences with him where he's disagreed with me or he's challenged me to do something I didn't want to do, and we kind of went at loggerheads a little bit. But he always, I always felt his great love for me, and that he wasn't asking me to stretch myself and feel that pain because he wanted to hurt me. He was asking me to stretch and feel pain because he loved me, and he knew that it would be the best for me. Isn't that true, Tatiana?
Yeah, we recently had orals just a couple of weeks ago, and it was probably one of the most amazing experiences of my life because of what he did. He got people up there, and instead of quizzing us on what we knew, he quizzed us on who we were, and some of the most painful self-evaluation that I think happened for me in a long time. I wasn't even real that hard. But the thing that was most amazing was how much love he had for us, and he didn't even have to say it. You knew it. The way he asked the questions and the way he looked at you and how much he really wanted you to succeed in that. He was making you go through this pain so that you would succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really painful for him as a mentor, and I've watched him teach and been his student. I think it's really painful for him when he has to watch us fail.
Yeah, actually, he said it. This one kid, he did pretty well, but he gave him a pass, and he tried again for honors, and he tried again for honors. And Dr. Mill said later that he was so tempted to give him honors, but he had to let him pass. He couldn't give him honors because it was really, really hard for him. It was really hard for him to allow him to fail and to watch him do that. He didn't want to, but God told him he had to.
That's interesting. Okay. Love is the common bond of friendship. We can see this in the story of Sam and Frodo and how Sam and Frodo went through all kinds of turmoil and all kinds of challenges together. And because Sam stood by Frodo's side constantly, Frodo had the strength to do the mission that he had. I think about the people in my life who have stood by my side and made it possible for me to do what I have done. I think about my children and the friendship that they have offered me, and the love that they give me. I think about my partner, Tiffany, and how much she loves me. Sometimes she'll just call me on the phone and just say, I just called to let you know how much I love you. And thank you so much for all the sacrifices you make for us. You know, it gives us the power to be great. If we withhold our love from the people most important and most dear to us, cannot be great in our eyes. We must love them fully and completely. So how do we do this? The Christian is taught that whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. In this quote, "We learn that we must reach out and serve one another in order for us to learn to be what God created us to be." Okay, I'd like to introduce two ways of how we see each other. This is the old way. The old way is that people are our enemy. That I must trust, I must protect myself and my own. That I am number one and responsible to myself only. Which is an Ayn Rand philosophy. Objective, what is that called? Objective epistemology, I think it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, we must learn how to see each other differently, to see people differently. Let me introduce a new vision, a new concept, a new thought that may help us and give us motivation to truly tap into the capacity within us to love. The new vision is that man is of four natures. Number one, they're eternally existent. Remember that Carl Jung proposes that the finite will never fully understand the infinite, meaning he believes that man was eternally existent. They were infinite.
You know, Nicomachus teaches that there's only... the only things that are real are those that are infinite, and he has another thing, but it's not real unless it is infinite and eternal.
Very interesting. Okay, so what I just think is so interesting is this concept. These concepts have been around for years, but we in our world today have become so material and so interested in our own, shall I say, we have created this capitalistic society that is very competitive and only interested in our own good, that we have forgotten the great truths that have been given to us by the great philosophers of the earth, that man is eternally existent, inherently innocent, boundlessly free, and infinitely perfectible. As Rousseau said, that we must just learn to deal with one another, and in that we can become perfected. Because I'm LDS, I'd like to introduce a story from my own church history, and that is of Joseph Smith and how he started the LDS Church, which I feel is a very great heritage for myself. He was trying to create a leadership of people that would help to lead the church. And as he would choose people to come and help lead, he created what he called the Brotherhood. And when you came into the Brotherhood of this organization, he had them take a specific covenant of friendship towards one another. He called this the School of the Prophets. But in order for you to be in the School of the Prophets, you had to take a covenant of friendship. And that is why in my church we refer to each other as brother and sister, because he called this the Brotherhood, that we have a brotherhood amongst us. Now, I think that's very interesting that in order to be in this special organization, you had to take a covenant of friendship. How important is it for us to be friendly, to be friends, to actually engage in maybe what Rousseau is proposing, that we have a covenant of friendship with one another. Many people have asked the question, am I my brother's keeper? And if we truly believe that the best way for us to behave one with another is to take this covenant of friendship, then we would have to say a friend, yes, is his brother's keeper. And is responsible to God for it. The other thing that we can do is to seek for understanding and develop the abilities for seeing people differently. So now we see people differently. We know they're infinite, that they're eternally existent. I suggest that you study the many, many different personality type systems that are out there today to get the understanding so that we can start giving forgiveness for the different little segments of the world that we are each in. I'm going to give you a list of some of my favorites, and I'm sure there are plenty more out there. And it, at the end of the call, if someone else has one that they'd like to propose, I'm going to let you. I really like the Briggs-Meyer. There are many, many books, hundreds of books, I think, out that, or Meyer-Briggs, however you want to say it, that talk about that system that originated with Carl Jung, basically to help you understand human nature. I'll give you the name of some of them. Please Understand Me Too. I like that one, better than Please Understand Me. Nurtured by Nature, which is for children. I like Life Types. And like I said, there's so many, many others. Those are probably my three favorites. I think The Color Code by Hartman Taylor is very good. And that system originated, has been around since the Middle Ages. I'm not exactly sure where it originated, but I know that Shakespeare talks about it. And he talks about it in terms of the color code is cut up into four different personality, the natures, man's nature, the four segments. And he says there are four colors. And in Shakespeare's time, there was four what they called humors, which are the exact same thing, choleric, phlegmatic, sanguine, and melancholy, yellow, blue, red, and white. And I think that's a really good one. Let's see. Tatiana, are there others that I do? There's the DISC program that I know that Elaine Davies really likes, D-I-S-C. There is the Enneagram, which is very interesting. There is a book called Emotional Intelligence that I think is really interesting that compares emotional intelligence to the IQ or intellectual quotient, the emotional quotient and the intellectual quotient, and how we, many of us, differ in our abilities on both of those. Off the top of my head, I'm drawing a blanket and any of those. So we can discuss more of those. Okay. But the purpose for these things, this understanding, is not first to understand others. That is not the purpose. The purpose is first to understand yourself, to become brutally honest with who you are and master your own.
I think it's interesting that when Jesus is asked what the great commandment or the highest law is, love thy God, and then the second thing is, love the neighbor as thyself. I don't think we're really fully capable to love our neighbor until we love ourselves. And I think we need to understand.
Yes. Yeah, understand ourselves, right. Okay, so once we can understand ourselves and be brutally honest, that is when we can allow for the differences in other people, if we can accept who we are. So we must master ourselves. Let us remember that it is carnal to get angry. It is carnal to be prideful. It is carnal to find fault. It is carnal to have fear. What we want to be able to do is to tap into the divine mind. That is our goal. If we can just tap into the divine, that is when we can truly make a difference in society. But it is divine to love. It is divine to forgive. It is divine to see man as he really is. It is divine to be meek and humble. Once again, it is divine to love. No man can serve two masters, for either he will love the one and hate the other. I propose that within us, we can see the natural man or the carnal man and the divine man as two masters. We have to choose which one of them we are going to serve. If we feed into the natural man, we hate the divine man within us. If we feed into the divine man, we reject the natural man within us. Again, we must see ourselves and others as eternally existent, inherently innocent, boundlessly free and infinitely perfectible. The other day, as I was cleaning the house, thinking about doing this call, I thought a lot about the statement that Dr. DeMille says constantly, freedom works, freedom works, freedom works. And it's almost become my mantra, because believe me, it is not my natural tendency to allow freedom, because I want to control things, or I want things to be the way that I want them to be, because I want my will. But it is, it's so weird, as I don't want to give other people freedom, but I want to be free. And so I have to remember, freedom works. And I was always thinking about him saying this over and over and over again. I thought to myself, you know, what if he had a child that was disruptive and made really bad decisions and choices and went astray? He would look like he had egg on his face. Would you agree with me, Tatiana?
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
Or would he? Isn't it the whole point that we allow them to fail?
Yeah.
You see, I have this belief that as I perfect myself and work on myself, my kids can make all kinds of really bad decisions and choices if they need to. Hopefully they won't. But they will always have the example of me. I'd like to share with you the story of my father. You know, his parents were very religious. His parents made all kinds of sacrifices to be able to move over here from Sweden. My father was 100% Swede. He actually spoke Swedish. And his parents, his mother came over when she was 16 years old to earn money as a maid. And every dime she earned, she sent back to Sweden to get the rest of her family back over here. They made all kinds of sacrifices so that they could be here in Utah with what they thought was the gathering of the saints. And they made the sacrifices because they believed that as they gathered together the saints, that they could create a wonderful society with each other. They loved their God. When my father was 17 years old and he went off to Caltech and was convinced that religion was just a figment of man's imagination, that we created religion, or that God was a figment of man's creator, imagination, that we created religion so that we could control one another, and started to reject the religion itself, my grandparents were devastated. My father came home riding on a motorcycle, smoking cigars, you know, all kinds of really rebellious, bad things. But I remember my grandfather, and my grandfather died when I was very young, but my father tells me this, that my grandfather always believed that God was in charge, and that if it was my father's need to fail right now, that he was going to learn something really important for his life. And my grandmother and my grandfather talk about the great prayers that they put up in behalf of my father, and that they continually believed that if they set the example, my father would make good choices and that he would start making something good of his life. And in fact, that is exactly what happened. They gave him enough freedom to fail that he realized, okay, I'm free. I tested the waters. I'm free. Now I can succeed. In closing, I don't know if any of you are familiar with one of our teachers. Her name is Stacy. Last year, she experienced a very trying thing in her life. And she lost a very young child suddenly in the middle of the night. It's very tragic for her and her community. And I believe that she feels that her community rallied around her so well. But I would like to leave with you Stacy's exhortation to mothers and fathers throughout the world, that her daughter did not die in vain, that she left behind her a legacy, and that she left with her family an important message that Stacy would like all to hear. And that is, life is too short. Stacy has asked us as parents to love more, to hold our children more, to be more forgiving, to be gentler. Remember that this life is a very short time, that all mankind deserves and is worthy of our love and our acceptance. Wordsworth says, unless above himself man can erect himself, how poor a thing he is. This is our new vision. Let us offer this to our family and to our students, and become the greatest and best teachers that we can. I'm going to go ahead and open up for comments, questions.
Hi, I missed The Man Has Four Natures, and I know you said it three times, but I only got the first two. Could you give me the other two?
Eternally existent,
mm-hmm.
Inherently innocent, boundlessly free, and infinitely perfectible. Now, we can see these four natures proposed in many of the writings of the great philosophers, but I got this list from a great man that I think is great. His name is Joseph Smith. That helps any of you guys.
Thank you.
And Melody, this is Sherry. Good morning.
Hi.
And good morning to everyone. This has just been a very inspiring and what a wonderful call for this time of the season.
Yeah.
The comment I wanted to make was, freedom works. Freedom does work. But the thing that I have discovered is that, especially when we're dealing with our children and with people that we love the most and are closest to us, is that it does work. But it doesn't always go the way that you want.
Yeah.
And as we know, as you know from watching revolutions, you know, people fighting for freedom and allowing freedom to do, you know, there's all kinds of sacrifices you make. And when you go this route, it's not the easiest route.
No, it's not.
It's the harder route to go. But in the long run, makes the biggest difference.
Sherry, wouldn't you agree with me that when we believe in freedom, we truly learn how to love?
Yes, we do, because it allows you to love people regardless of the decisions that they make.
Right.
When you know that you're operating from a place of freedom,
right,
then it's up to them, the choices, the changes, whatever that they make. But you are able to, I think, I absolutely agree with you.
The belief in freedom and love almost have to go hand in hand, right?
Yes, because when, you know, if you choose the other route, which is tyranny, you can be happy that maybe they are obeying you for certain periods of time, but there is a loss of affinity.
Yes.
And probably on both sides, but surely on the other side, because they may be doing what you want them to do, but they haven't had the change of heart. They're not making choices and doing, you know, going on the path that they should be on because they've chosen it or because they see that it's where they need to be, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable or whatever.
Right.
They're going that way because they've been
it's
made
your,
to do
it's
it.
It's your power and your energy that they're doing it,
yes.
Not their own.
Yes.
They haven't been empowered. And that, I think, I really agree with you that empowerment comes from that change of heart.
Yes.
That is so true. That is so true. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you all. We love you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode.
Just as in every Lemmy training, we hope you walk away uplifted and inspired, but also empowered to be a better mentor for your family and your community.
Please be sure to subscribe and share.
We also want to express our gratitude to all the Lemmy mentors, past and present.
You got this. You can do hard things.